Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Revenge for Now by Bob Howard. Narrated by Graham Halstead. 1. Coming Home, Mid-Atlantic Ocean, 2023. The chief had one goal on his mind, but that didn't mean he wasn't thinking about where he was and what might be ahead while they were still on the water. He felt like there was a trail of unfinished business ahead of him. After leaving the Isles of Scilly behind, he remembered the Wari. It would mean an extra day at sea, but he had given a lot of thought to what Iris had said to him when they were flying through the thick clouds over the Appalachians. He knew she was right, and even though they had already done plenty to save people from the infection, maybe they could do more. Still, he wasn't entirely comfortable playing the role of judge and jury. That was why he had a long talk with the captain of the HMS Ambush. Callum Byrne was a bit younger than most skippers of fast-attack submarines, but he had gotten the job through necessity. Just like many other ships, most of the crew of the Ambush was on shore leave when the infection seemed to wash over the countryside and through the towns. The submarine base at Faslane, Scotland, was far enough from Glasgow to keep the Ambush from experiencing the hordes of infected, but in an ironic way, their isolation was what caused the infection to go unchecked at the beginning. The reports of flesh-eating people weren't taken as seriously as they were in London, and by the time the Royal Navy understood the full extent of the crisis, it was too late. All three submarines docked at two piers were forced to cast away their lines with skeleton crews on board. The Ambush was the first to slip through the narrow gap at Rue Point and then past the mouth of the River Clyde. As they made the turn near Holy Loch, where the United States had maintained a submarine staging area for years, they were met by a flotilla of small boats. Some of the boats carried submarine sailors who were trying to get back to Faslane or sailors stationed at Her Majesty's naval base, Greenock, but most carried civilians. It was only natural that the Ambush sorted through the refugees and supplemented their crew. There were even a few civilians who volunteered for duty rather than face what was happening on land. After medical examinations were conducted on the deck of the submarine, they closed their hatches and were on their way. Captain Byrne had been the weapons officer until the moment they had pulled away from their berth at Faslane. The orders had come through loud and clear that the boat was to head for open waters immediately. He had informed the base commander that the skipper and his executive officer were only minutes away, but the senior officer had only responded angrily that he would have the next ranking officer take over if his orders weren't carried out in the next 60 seconds. Preparations had begun earlier, and they were only waiting for the captain and XO, so Lieutenant Byrne had become Captain Byrne in that single minute. He acknowledged the order and then gave a few of his own. The sparse crew on duty in the control room performed their tasks as they were ordered, but they exchanged glances that asked without words if they were supposed to be leaving port under the command of their weapons officer. It was Byrne's good luck that a chief petty officer well respected by the crew was on duty when he assumed command. The chief had the military experience to recognize what was happening, and he had the presence of mind to sound the general alarm. When the klaxon sounded throughout the boat, all crew members not on duty responded by going to their battle stations, and the glances shared in the control room became focused on their various displays. Maneuvering orders were given, and the Ambush left its berth faster than any harbor pilot would have appreciated. That had been the beginning of the longest deployment of any nuclear submarine, and Captain Byrne had settled into the job. With no clearly defined mission, they had patrolled the southern coast of the United Kingdom near the English Channel, while the other two submarines had gone north. Over the years, they had brief contact with a few surface ships, but the closest thing to real orders had been encrypted messages to simply protect their country from invasion. That was clear enough to the crew of the Ambush, but the arrival of the Americans had been a welcome distraction. When the chief had approached him and described a particularly brutal group of degenerates who occupied a derelict tanker named Wari, he could have said it wasn't his responsibility. But he knew the apocalypse would never truly end if they didn't eliminate the people who had capitalized on the misery of others. He wished he could aid the chief with his quest in America, but a submarine wouldn't be much help where they were going. At least he could help with the Wari. Besides, he felt like his crew had displayed a sense of purpose since meeting the Americans, and morale was high. Another act of justice might be just what they needed. It didn't take long for the HMS Ambush to find its target, but Captain Byrne didn't rush in for the kill. At periscope depth, the silent submarine circled the rusty tanker, and he surveyed the spectacle from a distance. The chief stood across from him, waiting for his reaction. Unlike the old submarine days when the man at the periscope was the only one to see the outside world, the view through the scope was being fed to a monitor where everyone present could see what had made the captain speechless. The pirates on the Wari had been busy. There were almost a dozen small sailboats and four luxury yachts tied up at the makeshift dock. Damage to the boats was evidence that not all of them had surrendered without a fight, but there was little doubt that the crews and passengers of those boats were now either dead or occupying space in the cages high above the deck of the tanker. Even as they watched, a fishing boat was leaving the dock and trolling live bait behind it, but the biggest surprise was the scene that was playing out on the far side of the tanker. The pirates were rapidly closing in on a new victim. Captain Byrne ordered his crew to make flank speed on a course that would intercept the pirates as he turned toward the chief.
"Sometimes justice should be delivered face to face," he said.
The chief didn't need to ask him what they were doing, and he had a new appreciation for Byrne as the submarine surged to a position that would place them in the direct path of the pirates.
"This is going to be good," said the chief.
"Surface the boat,"
ordered Captain Byrne, and since they were already shallow, the sail broached the surface in seconds. The massive bulk of the ambush appeared in front of the pirates so suddenly that they were forced to throw their craft into a hard turn to port. The combination of their turn and the swells created by the water displaced by the submarine caused a wave to wash across both boats, but it was like a bug hitting the windshield of a car. The small boat was dragged into the strong current that ran alongside the submarine, and its hull was ripped apart. Captain Byrne ordered,
"All stop! Prepare to recover survivors!"
"Captain?"
asked the chief. Before the chief could ask why they were going to rescue the pirates, Captain Byrne cut him off and gave the rest of his orders to the senior chief petty officer.
"Open the small arms locker and issue rifles to 6 men designated for disciplinary action. I shall pronounce the sentence myself."
Iris had quietly come into the control room and watched without saying anything. But as the chief petty officer announced over the interior communications system for specific sailors to report for duty at the small arms locker, she got out of the way by moving further inside and closer to her husband.
"What are they doing?" she asked.
"They're doing it the right way," he answered. "He's given them the dignity of a firing squad. He'll be able to live with executing them by first explaining why they're being shot. It's more than they deserve, but it's a token of civilized behavior. Then he's going to sink the Wari."
Being a man of the sea, Chief Barnes was granted permission to be topside for the proceedings. They were brief and to the point. The 4 men who were dragged from the water resembled wet rats, and at first they were jabbering in gratitude almost nonstop. When they were positioned shoulder to shoulder across the deck and realized they were facing 6 armed sailors who were formally arranged in 2 rows of 3, their smiles faded. Captain Byrne stood behind them and made a simple proclamation that piracy was punishable by death, and he only wished there was a more appropriate form of punishment at his disposal, something that would allow them more opportunity to think about what was going to happen to them. The front row of sailors dropped to a knee, and all six rifles were aimed at the wet pirates. Two of them opened their mouths to speak, but the one-word command from Captain Byrne interrupted them. The rifle shots were perfectly delivered with one single sound. Two of the four executed pirates fell to the center of the deck, but the two on the port and starboard sides slid over the side into the ocean. As if it was a duty they performed every day, the sailors formed a single line and returned to the open hatch, leaving the bodies where they fell. Captain Byrne didn't need to say it, but as he passed the chief, he said, "Let's finish this business." The appearance of the submarine had caused concern on the deck of the Wari, but the concern turned to panic when the firing squad disposed of four of their people. Some knew what was about to happen and hurried to escape their fate. A fight broke out at the rope ladders on the stern, and the first few to climb over the railing made the long fall to the dock below. Some were smart enough to know they wouldn't be able to fight the crowd without getting tossed over the side, so they jumped wherever it was clear below. As soon as they hit the water, they swam to the boats. HMS Ambush slid beneath the surface. Unseen by the pirates on the Wari, the submarine moved to a position directly behind the big ship. Instead of establishing a firing solution to hit the tanker broadside, Captain Byrne gave orders to target the staging area at the stern. It was a simple task for the warship, and it would guarantee that no one would escape with one of the smaller boats. Below the surface, Captain Byrne decided to break with protocol one more time.
"Attention, all hands. This is the captain. All crew not on a duty station. Proceed to control."
As the warship moved into position and established periscope depth, the control room was packed with excited faces, all eyes on the monitor that displayed the image of the Wari. The order was given, and a torpedo was sent on its way toward the dock where the sailboats and luxury yachts were moored. The explosion was spectacular, and the fireball that rose upward practically erased the name of the ship. It also expanded outward and ignited the sailboats and yachts as if they were nothing more than dried leaves. When the initial blast cleared enough for everyone to see the stern of the Wari, they could see that it would sink slowly, but it would definitely sink. Water rushed into the gaping hole to fill the dark compartments behind the place where the dock had been. Kathy found the chief sitting in a booth in the crew's mess. A half-eaten meal was on a tray pushed to one side. He was so immersed in what he was reading that he didn't even notice she had eased into the seat across from him. She waited patiently for him to turn a page before she spoke.
"You know the captain said we should be back tomorrow. Have you decided where you want him to drop us off?"
"I guess I should talk to him," he said, without taking his eyes off the book between his elbows.
"What have you got your nose buried in now? Whatever it is, it must be interesting."
"One of the officers loaned me this. He has a pretty good library about the U.S. This is a history of the area around Atlanta, and I'm stumped about something. The population was immense at the time of the outbreak, and we both know the worst places to be were the big cities. People were trapped in their homes, their businesses, their jobs, their schools, and places like sports stadiums. Can you imagine what it was like at that airport?"
Kathy nodded in agreement as she considered how lucky they were to be near the coast at the start. As a former police officer, she didn't have to think hard to know the first responders in Atlanta were pulled in every direction until their resources were stretched beyond their breaking point.
"So what are you saying?" she asked. "We already know how bad it was. Is there something that's making you have second thoughts about us going there?"
"We have to go there, but if I'm right, we won't find what we're looking for when we get there. I think our friends got too close to someone else who was just passing through. We already know how hard it is to sustain any sort of large presence near big cities. What if the home base they use is somewhere else?"
"I don't know," said Kathy. "I guess we won't know until we get there."
"That's my point," said the chief. We could spend weeks searching a large portion of northern Georgia and not find anything except the infected. We might even lose more people in the process.
Are you having second thoughts about getting even? Now that the AC-130 is gone, we won't have the tactical advantage we planned on.
The chief got a half-grin that was more from the thought of sweet revenge than from humor.
Not having second thoughts, but giving more thought to how we can get the plane back and then rain a little hell on someone's head.
Kathy sat back in her seat and studied her friend closely. There was something about him that said he had worked out some of the details.
Am I detecting the telltale signs of Plan A?
The chief grinned again, but this time it was because he was at least a little amused.
Maybe, he said. If we get a bit lucky. Then again, we've generally gotten lucky more often than a lot of people. This time we'll be searching for luck while we search for the people who attack the soldiers.
The chief laid the book in front of Kathy, and she saw that the page had a map of northern Georgia. She didn't see anything that caught her eye, and before she could say so, he flipped to a page toward the end of the book. It was a map of the southeast, and the chief put his finger on Kentucky.
Ever been to Fort Knox? He asked.
No, I don't think they do tours, so I never had a reason to go there.
The chief traced a line with his finger between Georgia and Kentucky.
If I wanted to gather an army around me and take over what's left of the eastern half of the country, I think I would want to have my headquarters here. There are plenty of bases in Georgia, but those would be sources to plunder for supplies. Fort Knox would be my safe place because I would be able to watch my own back.
Kathy frowned as she listened to the chief. At first it was because she was considering what he suspected, but then it was because she remembered something Dr. Buss had said about the locations of other shelters.
Wasn't Fort Knox on the list of shelter locations Buss gave you?
Yes, it was, but he said he didn't know if they'd ever finish that one. He said the place was so secretive to start with that Titus Rush wouldn't talk about it. Buss tried to get it out of him once, but all Titus would say was that he had a deal with the government and he wasn't going to mess it up over one shelter.
The chief picked up a laptop from the seat next to him and flipped it open. The warship had maintained an extensive digital library to keep the crew entertained as well as informed. There were strict policies in place to prevent viruses from getting into the LAN, such as no personal flash drives allowed and virus detection software working at all times, but the crew valued their network because it was a reminder of what had been lost. They treated it as a connection with the past.
I found some good material in the reference section of the ship's library. Here's a picture that was taken from the outside of Fort Knox. The only picture from the inside is so generic that it could have been taken anywhere and just labeled as inside.
The inside picture was of a man sitting in a sparsely furnished office behind a very nondescript desk. Judging by the suit and the man's hairstyle, the photo was taken around 1956. The outside picture was dated 2010, but the only differences between it and an earlier picture taken in 1970 were the clarity and the addition of taller towers at the four corners of the main structure. There was no information about when the towers were added, but they made a lot more sense than the short structures that used to sit at the corners. The outside pictures appeared to have been taken from the same distance and location. The chief had that excited tone in his voice that showed up when his mind was working overtime. He talked just a bit faster, but the tone gave away the fact that he was putting together the pieces of a plan. He hadn't said enough for Kathy to know what it was, but it was at least obvious that they would be on a road trip to one of the most heavily fortified vaults in the world.
"Check this out," said the chief. "This place was so secret that only one president has ever been there. It had its own police force, and it was located on an army base. It's surrounded by minefields and fences, but there's nothing in the references about upgrades that would have been installed as technology advanced. I wouldn't be surprised if laser beams were used to set intruders on fire."
I'm about 2 steps behind you, Chief. If it's that hard to get into, what good would it be to us or to the bad guys? The only people it was likely to be useful to were the staff members who were inside when the infection hit. Kathy trailed off as she asked the last part of her question. If the place was that well fortified, then there were 2 likely scenarios that played out at Fort Knox. They either shut the place down and kept the virus out, much like the way the LAN was controlled in the submarine, or someone breached protocol for a family member or coworker, and the infection had gotten inside. The chief was already weighing the 2 likely outcomes just as Hampton came into the galley. He slid into the bench next to Kathy.
Hey, folks, what did I miss?
Hampton was in a jovial mood, which fit with his overall outlook on life, particularly given their recent success getting Henry home to his family. Still, there was a piece of pessimism that he had expressed for a long time, and it was a good fit in the conversation the chief had been having with Kathy.
Kathy and I were just talking about you. Well, not directly about you, but a philosophy you've expressed repeatedly since the day we first met. Your arrival just now was good timing.
You've got my attention, said Hampton. And judging by that picture you have up on that laptop screen, my guess is that you guys have been talking about whether or not the infection got inside Fort Knox. My answer to that question is of course it did. Sooner or later, it gets inside everywhere.
Kathy said, it's never gotten inside Mud Island or Green Cavern.
But it got inside Fort Sumter, Ambassador's Island, and Maybank's oil rig. Look how many holes we plugged inside the UK shelter. If we hadn't been invited to help secure the place, how long before it would have been breached?
You're right, said the chief. The question is whether it got in at the start, or did it get in later?
Later, said Hampton. Fort Knox undoubtedly had a protocol in place that locked it down as soon as there was evidence that the world was going to hell. How many times before this started did you hear someone say that something was locked down tighter than Fort Knox?
Good point, said Kathy. So, what happened next?
That's easy, he answered. They tried to help someone. Guards' families showed up, or they ran out of essentials. They went out for supplies, maybe rescued a family, and brought the infection back with them. Why are we talking about this anyway?
The chief and I think there's another shelter under the main building. That brought a smile to Hampton's face, but this time it was total amusement.
Who would be crazy enough to try to break into that place even now? If the infection got inside, then that's just another layer of security. If it did or didn't get inside, then the guards that were watching the gold before are still watching it today. They're a little slower, but they're a touch more deadly. Besides, gold is worthless now.
The chief answered,
Tell that to people like the sheriff in Huntsville. There was no shortage of people like him before the infection. I promise you there's someone out there who would consider themselves to be rich if they managed to reach the gold inside Fort Knox.
I'll give you all that gold for a few cases of 9mm ammunition, said Kathy. But I know you aren't thinking about getting inside for the gold. And how does this fit with the people in Atlanta?
I was going to ask the same thing, said Hampton.
The chief took in a deep breath before he began. He had been mulling over a plan for Atlanta since the day that Sparks left them stranded. A land assault on a superior force had never been what he wanted to do, but the loss of the plane left them few options.
I don't think we're going to find those people in Atlanta. I think they were only there to find the things they needed to get into Fort Knox.
Like what? Asked Kathy.
Well, the AC-130 for one thing. If you want to clear the minefield and take out the guard towers at the 4 corners, one pylon pass around the building would do it. You know, like the one we did at Ambassador's Island.
Hampton shook his head.
You'd only need to do that if the place was still guarded. If the infection got inside, you should be able to walk right up to the front door. They didn't bury mines in the road, did they?
Okay, said the chief. Let's go on the assumption the infection got inside. How many people are we talking about? I'm going to guess they had at least 30 guards on duty with 3 shifts. If every guard made it to the facility when things went bad, that would mean nearly 100 people. Add to that the number of family members, friends, neighbors, and stragglers, and there could be 400 to 500 infected inside. This book says they employed about 1,700 people. The high-end number of people inside could be up to 5,000 or 6,000. Hampton let out a low whistle.
Maybe someone plans to just open the doors and let everyone out. The plane could safely eliminate them.
Kathy said, if that's their plan, they should think of something new. The place isn't like a coliseum jammed with people. The inside is likely to be a twisted maze of corridors constructed with the intention of making it difficult for people to find their way around.
That's what I'm counting on, said the chief.
That one comment stopped his companions from saying another word. They had known him long enough to recognize when he already had something in mind, but he also liked to make a dramatic pause when he knew he had his audience on a hook.
Kathy said, spit it out, Chief. We know you've already made a plan. What is it?
Instead of answering, the chief pulled his immense body sideways and stood up from the booth. Few people fully appreciated his size until he stood up, so his simple action drew the attention of sailors sitting in the other booths. The top of his head was almost to the ceiling, or overhead as they called it on a submarine.
You're not going to tell us? Asked Kathy.
Right now is just a thought, he said. But if the timing is on our side, what if we can get there before them? What if we could be inside waiting and pull off an ambush the way they did to our guys?
Hampton was still skeptical and asked,
what makes you so sure they'll even show up there?
I've had hunches before, and they haven't all been good, but this time there's something that makes me very sure. I don't know if it was something that I heard or something I read. I just know that my gut is telling me Atlanta isn't where we'll find these people. Fort Knox seems to be logical.
Kathy nodded. I agree, and maybe it's worth checking just on the off chance we would find another shelter there. I still have one minor problem, though. Breaking into the most secure vault in the world is hard enough, but if it's also occupied by the infected, it might be impossible.
Iris walked into the galley. And although the crew was fairly used to female shipmates, she still drew a fair amount of admiring glances. Her tall, slender body was accented by her silver hair. Long and straight, she could have passed for a tall elven queen in a fantasy movie.
There you are, she said to the chief. The captain would like a word with you about where we want to get dropped off.
Good, he answered. I hope Captain Byrne wouldn't mind a detour.
You don't want to go to Charleston or Mud Island? Asked Iris.
Kathy answered for him.
That busy little mind of his has a plan, but he hasn't told us the details yet. He wants to go to Kentucky now.
Sometimes stating the obvious was fun, so Iris said,
Oh, I'm sure Captain Byrne can get us there in a nuclear submarine.
That earned a grin from the chief, and his smiles were so infectious that the others had to join in with their own.
Cute, he said, but I have somewhere less landlocked in mind. When we traveled down the coast to circle Florida and get to the Gulf of Mexico, we gave the Beaufort, South Carolina area a wide berth for a good reason. We didn't know how the military would react if we dropped by, and we were in a bit of a hurry. I think we should finally visit the place and see if they left any ospreys sitting around.
Ospreys? Asked Kathy.
You most likely saw one and didn't give it much thought before the infection, said Hampton. They flew up and down the coast between marine bases like Camp Lejeune and Paris Island. They can do vertical takeoff and landing, so you don't need a runway.
The chief nodded.
I always wanted to fly one of those things. If we can get lucky one more time, we can make good time getting to Kentucky.
Any chance we could check on the other shelters on the way? Asked Kathy.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?